This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Jose Domingos, CEO, and Matt Hughes, Business Development Manager from an organization called the Accreditation Commission for Healthcare, or what's commonly known as ACHC. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Pleasure being here. Thank you.
You know, most of my listeners, when they think of the term accreditation, they think of computer security and FedRAMP, and they always, at least federal IT professionals, they pair it together with certification, and they call it CNA, and CNA this system, and CNA that, and qualifies for this. But what I wanted to do is maybe open up the world of federal IT a little wider and broader for our audience. You know, I mean, you know, it looks like the projection is going to be that healthcare spending in the United States is going to hit $1 trillion pretty soon. So it seems to me there's a lot of different ways to slice it and dice it. And many of my listeners may understand computer security in terms of certification accreditation. What's going to impact their lives is going to be this type of accreditation. And I wanted to bring in folks and talk about healthcare IT, healthcare accreditation, and how different organizations interact with the federal government to impact all my listeners, not just the folks who do healthcare IT, but the people who do healthcare IT are going to be very, very interested in this whole topic of compliance and accreditation and healthcare IT. But before we jump in here, let's get your background. Matt, why don't you tell us about your background and how you wound up working for ACHC?
Absolutely. So I've been with ACHC since 2006. Before that, I worked for a North Carolina-based durable medical equipment, home health, hospice, pharmacy organization, and dealt with a lot with the reimbursement payers and got all my healthcare kind of knowledge there. And then in 2007, moved over to ACHC as the kind of the accreditation process manager. So kind of just oversaw the process and got to work with all of our clinicians and
pretty familiar with all the concepts and the federal regulations and a lot of our
dealing with CMS and a lot of the
regular Joe Sixpack listeners who are driving cabs out there or you know, taking the kids to soccer tonight. Absolutely. And Jose, what's your background, please?
My background's a little bit different. I come from a medical device world. I've been in medical device for the last 17, 18 years or so. Ran some surgical divisions and actually a cancer screening division for some very large medical device organizations. So ACHC is a not-for-profit organization. This is my first not-for-profit organization. Joined them about a year and a half ago as head of their marketing and business development group, and as of about 6 months ago, assumed the role of CEO within the organization.
And your organization it has a website. It's called achc.org. Get more information there. There's blogs. There's information on white papers. And there's information on different events that you go to. You guys are traveling all the time, huh?
We are. Matt is traveling or has been traveling all this week to two different events. But we probably participate in over 60 conferences a year right
Correct.
Now.
Yeah. And so let's kind of put this in perspective. So the federal government through HHS and CMS, what they do is they provide incentive payments for electronic health records. And they also provide payments for organizations that comply with their requirements to obtain funding and all kinds of different ways to interpret this funding. There's state-based, there's federal, there's military health system. But Jose, maybe you can tell us where you fit in this little whole $2 trillion adventure.
Absolutely. You know, on one hand, what we've done as an organization is, and really our existence has been to develop standards that eventually got approved by CMS, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And we now go out in certain market segments and hold agencies, community-based healthcare organizations, to those standards. And in many cases, for home health and, for instance, for durable medical equipment providers, we come in and before they can get reimbursed by Medicare, they would need to be approved and surveyed by one of the major national organizations, accrediting organizations.
So, Matt, is this the good housekeeping seal of approval, or what is this accreditation anyway?
Absolutely. So it allows us to go out and not only just, you know, not only just survey them on standards, but look at their business practices and be able to advise them on best practices and give them guidance that's going to overall help the organization, but then in the end, help the care that they're giving to the patients every single day. So when they get that certificate from ACHC, it's telling them, you know, we've raised the bar and we've taken it to the next level of from a healthcare standpoint and allowing us to come in and look at their organization.
You know, Jose, when you look at, you know, billions of dollars of expenses, no matter who's spending it, there's always room for abuse and fraud. And it would seem to me that your organization maybe would look at an entity that provides services for the federal government, and you may be able to take and eliminate some of that trouble before it even begins.
That's exactly right. So when we come in, we have an obligation, actually, to make sure that an organization not only is providing proper patient care, but also conducting their business in an ethical way. So we review everything from patient records to employee records to financial records to make sure that, in fact, there is an ethical approach to the way they run their business.
So, Matt, so someone with a post office box in Fort Lauderdale doesn't get $500,000 in reimbursement.
That's exactly right. You know, we one of the things that we're required to do, especially from the durable medical equipment side, is that, you know, locations, we have to make sure that they have a physical location and that they're existing, because people can create companies just, you know, in their home and you know, forge physician signatures, and that's what we're trying to prevent. And so it's our responsibility to make sure that we go out and physically see their location and make sure that they have posted business hours and that the patients out there have a provider that they can rely on and that they're getting the care they need.
So, Jose, there are a lot of specific terms and words that the federal government uses, like CNA, but there's also terms that you folks use and that you just used a term earlier. It's outcome-based quality improvement, or you look at durable medical. So what is a durable medical good?
It's everything from walkers to crutches to, you know, products that people would those typical kinds of products that people would use to get themselves through a situation. It can be an acute or a chronic situation, but it's all the aids, the physical aids that typically people would use.
So the people at CMS are saying, okay, we are going to spend $20 million this year on durable medical goods, but what we want is we want an intermediary to step in between us and the provider and just assure us that they comply with what we're looking for. And so you step in and say, oh yeah, we're ACHC, we work with CMS, we know exactly what standards they want, and we can go into Columbus, Ohio, and we can say, yes, ABC Hospice is qualified to receive payment from the federal government.
That's exactly right.
So you're almost their quality control agent, huh?
We are, in a way, and I'll tell you that ACHC has a reputation of having pretty high standards. So organizations that typically seek our services are typically very interested in raising the bar for their own organization, and so we do serve as a quality auditor within their organization.
You know, Matt, we had the folks from CDS on 2 months ago, and they're the ones who process all the payments from CMS. And by the way, they have a big office in South Carolina and Texas as well. And so from processing payments, flip it to the other end, where we talk about conditions of participation. And I thought that COP was payment, but I guess it's COP, conditions of participation. And that's one of the things you have to look at.
Absolutely. And so what Medicare has done is they've created their own set of standards, and they call them the conditions of participation. And so what we've done is we've taken those conditions of participation and basically encompassed those into our standards so that we cover those on behalf of the government. And then we then add other standards that we feel are important or that we feel are going to allow an organization to succeed, and we go out and measure that. So it's basically taking those COPs, embedding those into our standards, and then taking it a step further and raising the bar even more.
So you can actually save money for CMS on just so many different levels, from a financial level, it's obvious, but also from a quality level, to make sure that the care that's being provided is not shabby and there's no gaps in some of the performance there.
That's right. I mean, not only do we save money for CMS, but we've also been found to save money for the providers that we survey. those many of those organizations that have experienced our services have seen a improved efficiency because of our survey, because we do come in and provide best practice recommendations for how to run their business. Those improved efficiencies have in many cases turned into cost savings for them.
So, Matt, this survey isn't go online and tell me your favorite color. Surveys can be heavy duty in this world, can't they?
Absolutely. You know, there's a couple of different components. You know, we go in and we have a we do an introduction with the organization, and we sit there and we basically tell them exactly what they're going to see throughout the day. One of the things that providers, when they hear the word accreditation, they're like, uh-oh, they're going to come in and they're going to analyze. And ACHC takes a completely different approach. It's very educational. And so we go in and we have an interview or an intro with them, let them know exactly what they're going to get throughout the day. We look at client records, we look at personnel records, we do interviews with staff. And so
we have to take a quick break here.
Okay.
About a month ago, we had Dr. Doug Fridsman in the studio. We talked about preventative care for human beings and his good practices for preventative care. This is almost preventative care for payments. It's like, okay,
absolutely,
this prevents a lot of problems down the road. And believe me, after the problem happens, it's a whole lot more expensive to remedy the situation than before. So this is kind of like the canary in the coal mine in some ways. I'll mix up all my metaphors here. When we get back, talk more about CMS and reimbursements and payments and how they interact with other parts of the economy here in the United States. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Jose Domingos, CEO, and Matt Hughes, Business Development Manager from Accreditation Commission for Healthcare, or ACHC. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Jose Domingos, CEO, and Matt Hughes, Business Development Manager from an organization called ACHC, Accreditation Commission for Healthcare. What we're doing is we're taking this whole idea of healthcare IT. It's such a big topic. So many ways to slice and dice it. We're going to take at one little aspect of it. We're going to look at how CMS make sure that when it reimburses providers for services and goods, that it is it's a fair claim and they're not wasting money. There's no fraud and abuse, and they're getting quality for the dollars that you taxes pay for. I mean, if your taxes are paying for healthcare for a disabled person or someone with serious needs, how do you make sure that's good quality care? And that's what this organization, ACHC, does, acts as an intermediary between the federal government and you. That's what they are. And they assure that the money's being spent properly, your taxes, and that you are receiving adequate services. There's a fancy phrase, Matt, called a deeming authority. That's kind of, I'd like to be a deeming authority. What is a deeming authority anyway?
Deeming authority, yeah, it's a term that CMS uses. You know, when you look at accreditation, there's two phrases. You know, there's the want tos and the have tos. The people that want to be accredited and the people that have to be accredited. And so, with the have tos, CMS does is they grant deeming authority to organizations like ACHC. So we have three programs: our home health program, our hospice program, and our durable medical equipment program that we have deeming authority for. So they basically take a look at everything that we do, from our organizational processes to our standards to the way that we do things, the way that we survey, and they grant us that authority to provide those surveys on their behalf. So basically, you know, like you were saying, we are able to go out and do that on their behalf, which in essence is deeming authority for
so CMS. It's transferring trust. It says, hey,
absolutely,
we trust you guys, you know,
absolutely,
you've been around, you've proven yourself, you're ethical, and we will give you permission to certify providers in many different areas. And Jose, it's not just these three, there's more than just three areas, is that right?
That's right. Currently we have seven active programs. They are durable medical equipment, pharmacy, sleep centers, home health agencies, hospices, private duty organizations, and our most recent service program that we've launched is behavioral health programs.
Talk about front page newspaper, Boston, behavior,
yeah,
health, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We're also in the process actually of launching an eighth that we've just developed. And actually we developed this in conjunction with the government a few years ago, and that is our convenient care clinic accreditation. And the Army, I believe, came in and wanted to put convenient care clinics on their bases and had that concept for some time because they thought that it would not only be cost effective, but they provide a service for the servicemen and women and their families. Ultimately, because of some cuts, that program for the Army never took off. But we, in fact, now are seeing convenient care clinics sprout up all over the country, and we'll be beta testing that program in the very near future.
Oh, it's interesting. public-private partnership here. And I think it's difficult for many people to understand how easily and it benefits all parties for large federal agencies to work with independent organizations to assist them and not necessarily doing their tough work, but assisting them in the whole process of transferring the funds to the right locations. I mean, what if some place in Arkansas opens up a convenient care clinic and the people aren't accredited? They're bogus. I mean, this can happen, and it has happened in the past, hasn't it?
That's right. It has happened. And, you know, one of the things that that we also want to do is educate consumers on what the right questions to ask, because accreditation can really have an agency or a provider stand out among the masses that are out there. So how do you know what agencies to use? And as this world gets smaller and technology becomes a much more significant contributor in our lives, we often do research, and we often have loved ones across the country that we have to help in providing services for them. So that research is typically done over the internet, but how do you distinguish one provider from the next? And I think accreditation helps you do that.
Let's flip it and go to the other end, the standards themselves. Mm-hmm. So, Matt, who sets these standards? Are these mandated from above, these cast in stone from 2,000 years ago? Or where does CMS get these standards? Do you work with them? What are the standards bodies that develop these?
You know, they've developed, like we talked about earlier, the conditions of participation. So Medicare has, again, their set of standards that they want to follow. And I know they've been around a long time. And then what we do is we take those standards and we take clinical experts. So we take people who've lived it and breathed it for numerous years, and we have them develop the standards and kind of on top of them, the ACHC standards that truly are relevant to what these organizations do, these providers do every single day. And that's one of the selling points that I use, is just the relevancy of the standards. You know, our goal is not to create standards that don't apply to them or that aren't relevant. So we want to create things that's going to help them improve, and we're going to write these standards that's going to help their business overall in the long run.
You know, Jose, a popular buzzword on this station is collaboration. Mm-hmm. And Steve Van Ruckel down the White House, he says, well, geez, you agencies should collaborate together. Why should you have silos and 57 people have 57 programs? Guess what's going on. But if we take this collaboration, we can see how you are applying it to the public-private partnership. As an example, developing convenient care. Mm-hmm. But they must trust you enough to say, well, explore these options and see how we come back, because CMS might say, perhaps we can save money in this area, give better care.
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about the cost of the infrastructure that would be necessary for CMS or at a national level to put programs and services in place to be able to accredit the thousands of organizations that are out there, the cost to the government, to the federal government, would be enormous. And so having a partnership with an organization like ours that is held to very high standards ourselves, I think that really serves everyone very well.
So I'm going to bounce back to standards here with you, Matt. You know, NIST, we've had NIST folks on a whole lot. They're very active in public partner privateships, too. They sit together on boards and they help develop the standards. Mm-hmm. And then they say, well, here's a standard. We're going to walk away now and let someone else, you know, see if they're judged, because it's kind of like an auditor and an accountant, and they can't mm-hmm. develop that. So your organization is kind of parallel to some of the organizations that work with NIST, is that they take and they can they understand thoroughly what the standard is, and they can go to an organization and say, well, Joe Schmo in Chicago, this is what the standard calls for, and here's a gap, and here's what we suggest you do before you even attempt to get a credit.
Absolutely. And so with our standards written, our customers, what they do is they develop policies that meet those standards, and they submit those to us, and we review those. And even before we go on site, we look at the policies they've created to meet these standards, and we actually review them, and we give them feedback before the actual survey so that they can make any adjustments that they want to ahead of time to, you know, to be in compliance. And then we come out and we review on site those standards, and our goal is just to make sure that they've implemented them and that they're practicing those. They're saying they're doing what they say they do. And so I think that the process that we follow and what our customers do in order to be in compliance, the approach is just, it's great for them.
You know, Jose, in Portuguese-speaking countries, they have this thing called the cursinho, which is a prep before you take a big test, like a medical school mm-hmm. or college. And here we call them SAT preps.
That's right.
And so this is almost like, it's like cursinho in Portuguese. It's like, oh, it's kind of a prep before you, okay, now before you run that 26 miles, you may want to take and, you know, get in a few 10-mile runs in ahead of time. Is that a good parallel there?
It is. Now you're speaking my language.
Literally.
That's right. But what you'll find is it really speaks to our philosophy within our organization. And we're not there strictly to find what you're doing wrong, but our interest is to help you make to help you become a better organization. So having that upfront feedback and giving you an opportunity to correct those things that may be obvious, I think is key to partnering with that organization to end up with the ultimate result that we're all interested in.
You know, Matt, the last time I was in the studio, I spent 1 hour talking about mHealth and mobile health and just the tsunami of portable devices that are in all hospitals, all hospices. I mean, they're down the list. Every pharmacy, every clinic, even in the home, they're everywhere. And I think that the technology is changing. And so I think organizations like yours have to say, okay, let's get away with these spreadsheets. Maybe we have to adapt. And there may be new innovations that you're using to help collect this data or help people be more efficient.
Absolutely. And it's amazing how our organizations that we accredit out there are moving to the mobile devices. You know, I know that there are nurses out there that strictly look at all of the patient charts on their iPhones and on their mobile their phones. What ACHC does is, you know, we allow them to view our standards online, and we're able to download those electronically, and they're allowed to submit those electronically to us. And what we've done is we've developed a tool for our surveys to go out and collect all the data online. And so there's no paper. We're now paperless completely.
Paperless. Let's take a break. And when we come back, talk more about the social media and learning more about accreditation, learning more about this little dance with CMS and the providers and making sure that our tax money is not wasted and making sure that the people who deserve these services get good quality health care. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Jose Domingos, CEO, and Matt Hughes, Business Development Manager from ACHC. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Jose Domingos, CEO, and Matt Hughes, Business Development Manager from Accreditation Commission for Healthcare, or ACHC. And this is not the accreditation you're thinking of. This is a different type of compliance. This involves how the CMS spends money and how they carefully allot that money, and what this organization does is make sure that the providers all across the country are honest and sincere and they comply with certain types of regulations. Many of my listeners get information from social media, and I will be blogging about this interview. And you can find my blog by going to Google and typing in John Gilroy blog. So it's that simple. Do you folks have a blog, Matt, or what kind of social media you guys participate
yeah,
in?
Yeah, we it's as important and how popular social media is, we do. We cover all of the different the typicals. But yeah, we do have a blog on our website. We do a podcast that we post on the blogs called Survey the Expert, where we sit down with our surveyors and we talk about the experience that they have and things that they can discuss that customers can listen to and can get improvements right then and there and learn a little bit about the compliance and our standards and some of the pitfalls that happen. And then we're going to be releasing a new series and blogging about it called the Whiteboard Sessions. And this is where our educators and leadership team share those best practices and use hints on the industry news and accreditation process with ACHC.
I don't want to go back to a previous topic, but this word survey means so many different things to different people. You know, there's Survey Monkey, where you find out, you know, silly little questions about your favorite color, your favorite sports team. Then there's surveyors who are out in rural areas, and they have these sticks, and they measure what's going on. But the surveyors you're talking about are people who actually get in a plane and fly to Tulsa and sit down with people and try to see if they are careful with their execution of the federal funds. Is that right, or what does the surveyor do?
Absolutely. The experience that our customers have with our surveyors is just such an educational approach, and that's the way that we train our surveyors. But yes, the survey consists of the surveyor sitting down with them and going through what it is they're going to look at all day, and then they're going to look at the policies and procedures that they have in place and making sure that they've implemented them, and they're going to talk to the staff and they're going to interview the staff to make sure that the staff is in tune with what the organization's doing and the quality improvement efforts they're making. And then they're going to sit down with patients. They're actually going to go out with the healthcare professionals and interview patients to make sure that the level of care that's being provided is meeting our standards. And it's just, you know, it's a great experience for organizations to interact with our educational type surveyors.
So there's a young fellow here, Matt, involved in social media and blogs and Twitter and all that stuff. You're the big dog. You kind of look at it from 40,000 feet and try to see, you know, the whole process of standards and implementation and safe best practices. Talk a little more about HCHC and where they fit in with the federal government, CMS again, please.
Well, we're an extension of CMS for those services that we have deeming authority for, as you've mentioned earlier. And even for those services where we don't have deeming authority or they're not required, we also work very closely with Medicaid because there are certain state regulations that require accreditation. There are also third-party payers, for instance, that will require accreditation for the same reason that CMS requires accreditation. Third-party payers, organizations like Blue Cross Blue Shield, Aetna, United Healthcare, et cetera, in various states want companies to be accredited to make sure that the claims that they're paying are legitimate claims as well. So accreditation is used by many different organizations, state, national, and third-party payers in order to ensure compliance and no fraud being used.
And we're not talking about chump change here. You know, in 2011, it's estimated that there was $38.9 billion spent in durable medical equipment. I mean, so this is a significant chunk of change. And what they're trying to prevent, I think, is prevent a headline in the Washington Post saying, hey, five post office box organizations were reimbursed $1 billion by CMS. Were they accredited? Well, guess what? Now we have a way to prevent that, don't we?
That's right. And, you know, going back to the social media aspects, I think that's a perfect channel for us to also help educate the public. Because it is important that that people understand the value of accreditation as a consumer. That's a challenge. It's tough getting out there and reaching the masses. So we have a goal of doing that as well.
So, Jose, let's notch this up from 40,000 feet to the moon and look down at just the whole concept of compliance and accreditation and conformity. During the break, I was telling you about a story I read in this week's Network World. The interviewed a guy from the UL, a guy named Christian Anschutz. And he talked about the Titanic, and he said, well, did you know that the Titanic complied with all the safety standards for a number of lifeboats at the time? And so they were a compliant organization, and they still had a disaster. And so it seems to me, from your perspective, from looking at it more globally, well, you know, compliance is good, but is it good enough?
That's right. That's exactly right. I think you've said it really well. I think the analogy is perfect. When we look at our standards and the standards that we've developed, we see the CMS standards as minimal compliance. And we've added onto those to make sure that, again, organizations not only meet the requirements that CMS has stipulated, but also improve their business practices beyond that. And I think there's many accreditation organizations out there, but I think what you'll find is that our organization prides itself on having that high standard and really raising the bar well beyond what CMS requires as the minimum.
You know, Jose, last week there was a draft for the NFL and 32 teams out there. They're drafting players, and each team says, well, geez, we got a gap here. We need a defensive lineman. Or, you know, our wide receiver's down. We got to get another one. And so there's gap analysis that are done in the professional sports, gap analysis that are done for providers of health care. I'm sure hospitals need to be accredited, and they try to find out where the gaps are to ameliorate that situation and remedy it. So I keep thinking of gap and gap analysis and football. Well, there's gaps in your organization, the gaps in organizations you see. What are typical ones that you see that people have to move up to speed with?
Well, you know, I'll give you a for instance. We have I just went on a survey earlier this week, and one of the gaps for a particular agency that we were dealing with is they didn't have a very good complaint process in place, a place where their customers could come in and provide feedback. And I think within the organization, what you found is that the word complaint was taken as a negative term. So they didn't classify issues that their patients had as complaints. Now, the problem with that is that then you can't trend it, you can't do root cause analysis, and you may in fact have systemic issues with your organization, but you don't do the analysis because you don't treat it as a complaint.
And a complaint isn't my latte's too cold. The complaint may be with a $25,000 wheelchair.
Exactly.
And if it's one thing for an able-bodied person like me of average intelligence, the alternator is wrong in my car, I can complain. But think about the person who needs a $25,000 wheelchair. What are they going to do? Drive to someplace and complain? I mean, there has to be some way to complain about, you know, the services here.
That's right. And so, you know, there are various options. They can certainly contact the organization. And I will tell you, this organization was very intent on fixing any issues that came up. And that's one of the reasons they didn't see them as complaints, because they dealt with them. Unfortunately, it didn't give them the root cause definition as to what was really wrong. So that particular issue could repeat itself because they weren't doing the proper analysis. But absolutely correct. You know, I spend time with patients in that particular visit, and these people's lives depend on this equipment. And so it's really important that it gets dealt with properly, because it is expensive equipment, but beyond the equipment, the patients themselves, it is life-changing for them. So it is a big deal.
You know, Matt, my son would call this a first world problem. You know, my latte's too cold, the air conditioning isn't performing well enough. folks at your age read blogs. Are there other blogs within this community here that you read or you think might be beneficial for my listeners to learn more about this?
Yeah. We have a great relationships with a lot of the national organizations, you know, the National Association for Home Care, and we, you know, and NHPCO, the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization, and a lot of the large national organizations that support our programs, you know, they have a lot of experts and they blog. So I think going to a lot of the national websites that are programs for our programs and looking at the different blogs that they put out is more than beneficial for our organizations.
Great. Take a quick break and come back. We'll finish up our discussion talking about accreditation and CMS and actually every listener out there who sooner or later may have to take advantage of some of the services that CMS provides. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Jose Domingo, CEO, and Matt Hughes, Business Development Manager from ACHC, Accreditation Commission for Healthcare. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Jose Domingo, CEO, and Matt Hughes, Business Development Manager from Accreditation Commission for Healthcare, or ACHC. This is an organization that is involved in a public-private partnership with CMS, and it assures that the services that are provided to the federal government are of high quality, and there are no scam artists out there. How's that a nice way for talking about fraud and abuse? It reduces the number of scam artists to a minimum. Many of my listeners read blogs. Some of my listeners are involved in Twitter. So, Matt, do you guys have a Twitter handle, or how much involved are you with Twitter?
Yeah, ACHC is very involved with Twitter. We have, at ACHC is our Twitter feed. And
At ACHC, okay.
And as an individual, I'm not a tweeter because I don't think people are interested in what I personally am doing. But as an organization, you know, I think it's so important for us just to kind of keep everybody in the know. And so, you know, we like to tweet about, you know, different rules and regulations and changes that are going on in the industry. And so we get those out there so that it's available to our customers. And so there's so many different ways and avenues through social media, especially Twitter, for us to communicate with the public.
My handle is at Ray Gilray, and I follow your organization and retweet the good stuff, the regular stuff, you know, but the good stuff I try to retweet. You know, Jose, you work with the federal government, but you also work with regular commercial organizations as well in many of these aspects. Tell me about the organizations you work with.
We do. We work with commercial organizations as well as state associations. For instance, recently, Blue Cross and Blue Shield in Illinois dictated that accreditation for them to get reimbursed by Blue Cross and Blue Shield, they needed to be accredited or in process of being accredited by May 31st. And that was a pretty short deadline. So we reached out to all of the home health organizations in that state in order to let them know that we had a program that we could offer them that would put them in process before that deadline so they could in fact meet that standard. Also, earlier this year, the state of North Carolina dictated that private duty skilled nursing organizations needed to be accredited within the next 18 months. So we reacted pretty quickly to that. We offered a workshop at the end of February for those organizations that were interested in getting accredited that provided those services so that they know what to expect. You know, one of the biggest issues with accreditation is the fear of not knowing what to expect. So we try to take that fear by providing things like workshops, like workbooks that really take you through the entire process that you can find on our website. So it is a partnership.
Well, gentlemen, this is a part in the show where you have to take a special test I have, 10-question test, to find out your nerd rating. People are listening going, well, that shows he's got that funny name. Is he really a nerd or not? Well, I don't know. What about Matt? Maybe he's – we'll see who the real nerd in the room is here with answering these 10 simple questions. So, Jose, you got your first computer.
Yeah, I've been called a nerd. I'm pretty proud of that. My first computer, I think, was in 1985. I was on the list.
Big points. Matt was in his diapers back then, so it was going to be tough.
I was on a list to purchase a IBM PS2 at the time.
With a Chiclet keyboard, I remember. Yeah, that's how. Well, and the year you bought your first cell phone?
My first cell phone, actually, I was in sales in the early 90s. I think it was 1992. It was a big old bag phone that I was pretty proud of.
A big old bag phone. And do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I have a personal Twitter feed. Okay. It's at jdomingos08. I can tell you I'm not very active on it. Like I am not sure what I have to say is that important.
And you don't have a personal blog, just a company?
I do not. That's
okay.
Right.
And do you use any personal online backup?
I do. I use iCloud and I use Dropbox, as a matter of fact.
So what flavor smartphone do you have?
I have an iPhone. I'm pretty Apple-oriented.
Okay. A number of apps on that bad boy?
Oh, my goodness. I would say I probably have 240 apps, I think, last time I looked.
Ooh. And here's the new, how many tablet devices do you have in your home? That's the real question, not if.
We have I think, 2 iPods, 3 iPhones, 2 iPads, 2 iMacs.
And a partridge in a pear tree. You got tons.
Quite a collection.
You know you're involved in LinkedIn. Any other social networks?
I'm involved in, you're correct. I'm involved in LinkedIn. I'm also on Facebook. LinkedIn, obviously, for professional reasons. Facebook, more for the social aspects and really keeping in touch with family. Most of my family is overseas, so it gives me a great access to them, what's going on in their lives.
And last book you read was electronic or paper?
It was a paper book, as a matter of fact. I know,
man. You can catch up here. What a loser this guy is. Paper, come on.
Old school.
Should have did him second.
Okay, let's see if you can whelp him here, Matt. How old were you when you got your first computer? That may be a more fair question for you.
It was actually 1999. So you
could have been a youngster.
Yeah, okay. I was on my way to college, and so I was 18.
It was a year you bought your first cell phone?
It was actually past that. So today, you know, kids are getting them when they're in elementary.
Kids, come on.
In elementary school. So I think it was in like 2001 when I got my first cell phone.
Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I do. It was at MattHughes331.
Okay. Do you have a personal blog?
I do not.
Okay. No. What kind of personal online backup do you use?
Same as Jose, just using the iCloud. And
okay. What kind of smartphone you got there?
I have an iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Number of apps?
This is funny. 240, really? I have probably 50.
Whoa, you're losing the battle here, I'm afraid. Well, I have to get to the board here, and you're losing.
This is the other thing. Number of
how many tablet devices do you have at home? Oh, I hope it's more than 20.
I have an iPad, and we have 2 iPhones, and that's it. An iPad and 2 iPhones.
You get 1 for that answer, buddy. And active social networking, I know, with LinkedIn, anything else?
No, just LinkedIn. Stay away from the Facebook, my personal.
And here's the big differentiator. Last book you read, electronic or paper?
So it was absolutely paper, but it was as the requirement of Jose.
He could beat you in the survey.
He required me to read the book.
I'm telling you, I think Jose's got a leg up on you when it comes to being a nerd, buddy.
I have a big plan.
The nerdometer, you know, he had this plan years ago. Well, it's complicated. It's respectable. You know, I'm just trying to figure out how to get, you know, different age people where years ago. It's good. You know, all kinds of predictions what's going to happen the next 5 to 7 years in the United States with medical, you know, healthcare and bankruptcy, end of the world, everyone's going to be, you know, living on farms, and who knows what's going to happen. Well, where do you see this whole concept of healthcare IT and the federal government and conformity assessment? Where's it heading, Jose?
Well, I think there's a lot of constraints that organizations need to deal with, and I think many organizations will find themselves in a situation where they kind of need to reinvent the business that they're in and how they handle the business that they're in. Reimbursement, competitive bidding is going on right now, multiple phases of that, and there are organizations that are not winning those competitive bids that have been around for a long time. And the providers that we accredit, many of them have a high service content to them. So unfortunately, I don't know that when you go through the competitive bidding process, all that is taken in consideration. So they're going to have to figure out how to become more cost effective in the way they run their business. And I think that will be a drastic change, as well as the prominence that accreditation will play going forward with companies like ourselves, because as the government cuts back and they just can't afford to provide these services, they're going to rely on private sector in order to provide these services for them.
Yeah, and one of the services is effectively using their money. I mean, they don't want to be written up for, you know, how do you reduce fraud? I mean, this is front page newspaper, fraud here, fraud there. So how do they handle it? Well, this is a real efficient way to do it, is by having a private company do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's almost like a fee for service or something like that. Matt, where do you see this world heading in the next 5 to 10 years?
You know, I see the accreditation becoming more and more popular, and I see accreditation, you know, right now it's mandatory. The have to is only in a couple of our programs, you know, and we really focus on, you know, those programs and ensuring that we're providing the service, you know, as an arm to CMS. But I see a lot of the healthcare programs and a lot of these organizations leaning on accreditation to secure, you know, the care that's being provided out there, and ensuring that the folks, you know, the baby boomers and all of the folks that are needing this care, is they're getting, you know, quality care, and we're reducing hospital stays and all of those things. So I think they're going to lean on accreditation, and we're going to be busy over the next 5 to 7 years for sure.
Yeah, I read an article called Helping the Beleaguered Caregiver. And I think one way to help them is make sure that the services they get and the products they get are accredited and certified and comply with standards, and don't get something that's not worth anything or more trouble than they're worth. We're going to have to end our interview now. We're running out of time. You have been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We've been talking about public-private partnerships, CMS, accreditation, and compliance with Jose Domingo, CEO, and Matt Hughes, Business Development Manager from ACHC, Accreditation Commission for Healthcare.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.